today is actually Good Friday, which we can talk about. April 18th. My name is Michael Rodriguez, and I'm talking to Stuart Dybeck. Stuart Dybeck is a professor of English at Western Michigan University, has published two collections of short stories, The Coast of Chicago and Childhood in Other Neighborhoods, and a collection of poems, Brass Knuckles. Farrar, Straus, and Giroux will publish a novel and stories and a new collection of poetry in fall 2003. And I just did a search yesterday on Boker's, and that appears to be a little bit false. Their FSG is lining things up,
right?
It looks like, over the next few years.
So far as I know, the novel and stories comes out in November
right.
of this year, and the poems come out in spring 04.
The spring 04. They said something. What is the name of the title of the poems?
Streets in Their Own Ink.
Okay. Yeah, this says 2005. So,
well,
but they can make.
Maybe they're going to spring this out.
Yeah. Well, they can make their own schedule, too. This is an exciting time, isn't it? I mean.
You mean with books coming out?
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know if exciting is quite the word, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've published a lot of different things over the years in journals and so forth. And FSG is obviously one of the bigger, most reputable publishers, I think. It must be exciting to...
Oh, it's...
That sort of vindication.
It's great working with them, sure. It's one of the things... I don't know how important this is to the average reader, but I really like physically attractive books. And I mean, there's several houses that do them. FSG is one of them. Their books are handsome.
Mm-hmm. Well, just that they have a very nice collection of authors, too.
Yeah, they do indeed. The poetry series that John Galassi essentially edits has some of my favorite authors.
So you say that you're not particularly excited about the books coming out. Is that because you're more interested in what excites you more is the process more than the actual product?
I think so. I don't want to be disingenuous about it. I mean, everybody likes to have stuff come out, magazines, books, whatever, but there's also that feeling that by the time the work gets into publication, you've already kind of weaned yourself away from your own personal relationship with it. And in fact, if it's any good, what you're hoping is that the relationships will now be between the work and the reader.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out there on its own at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what... So in a sense, there's a lot of relief to have it off your desk because it's been on there for so long, usually. And to be working on new stuff, which in its turn you'll get tired of, I think the strongest relationship is always with the work you're working on in the present. So
you're struggling with there are a couple of sort of pet topics that we talk about in these discussions. One is this is the Michigan Writers Series, which means that either you live in Michigan, or you've been a long-time resident of Michigan, or that you write a lot about Michigan. One of the three.
Well, I got two out of three.
Yeah. Well, your fiction is what we've seen in book form anyway, has been about Chicago, which is obviously a Midwestern place, and you've chose to live in Michigan, which is not in Kalamazoo, which is not far at all from Chicago.
No, it's almost like a distant suburb.
Yeah. Yeah, the further up the coast is summertime residence for a lot of Chicagoans.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Obviously the landscape of the Midwest is something that's important to the work. And I wonder if, you know, how much further that goes. If, for instance, the work would have gotten done in the same way if you didn't live in the Midwest.
One can only suppose.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer to that. I just plain out don't know. I do know that I think it was important for me at one time to get out of the city of Chicago, just to have a slight bit of detachment, mm-hmm. even though I could always go back, which I in fact did. Mm-hmm. What I needed personally, and I'm guessing that the same would be true of other writers, and not all other writers, but certain kinds of other writers, is I needed to form a relationship between my imagination and the city. And living in the city was giving me such a strong documentary feel. Mm-hmm. Once I created an imaginary Chicago for myself, then it was a lot easier for me to go back and actually re-inhabit the city in actual time and space. But that first real necessity was to turn a real place into an imaginary mm-hmm. place. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but...
No, I think it does, especially with the sort of magical realism that happens in a lot of the stories, or something like that, mysticism, magical realism. I'm not really sure what to call it. But there's definitely... Chicago itself is... There's very literal elements of Chicago, the street names, the places. Those are all actual...
Right.
Places today, I know the neighborhoods have morphed over the years.
Right, exactly. For me, that what I'm always looking for is some kind of a counterpoint. That is, I think complexity occurs in a piece of writing when you use the elements of craft rather than when you actually try to think in a complex way. So, to go back to your statement, by using a real place name, but having something unreal happen, mm-hmm. you've created a kind of an interesting dynamic there. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you had changed the place name into something strange or in a way, then you don't have the counterpoint between the real and the unreal.
Mm-hmm. It's a kind of mythologizing of the actual place. And I read somewhere that you were, when you were much younger, you were a big reader of mythology.
Yeah, I love mythology. I still do.
Do you think that consciously works its way into?
Well, it certainly works its way in on an unconscious level, and I try not to think in terms of theory, so that impulse probably short circuits the conscious part of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you know, certainly I'm plenty of times conscious of borrowing from different myths. Mm-hmm. Just the standard ones that everybody borrows from.
Yeah.
Orpheus.
Right.
The underground.
The traditional myths.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's a whole Christian mythology that, having gone to Catholic schools, is just ready and waiting for you. Mm-hmm. And
this is something I really wanted to talk about because I don't know why, but it dawned on me a few hours ago. This is Good Friday, and there's all this Catholic mythology in the stories and the poems too.
Right.
So, I'm not going to ask you what you're going to read this evening, but is that still, I don't know what the new books are either. Of course I don't. I suppose I should frame this in the form of a specific question, but it seems to me that this is all tied together as well. The Midwestern Chicago Polish Catholicism and the balance of the actual and realism and something more like a mystical or mythological sort of framework by which things happen. I guess the question is, can you talk about something like that?
Well, I could talk about it at such length that what I'm trying to do now is just find some succinct way to say that. For one thing, a lot of times what seems to be a story about religion is really, to use your word, mysticism, a story about mystery. and that a shared language that we have for expressing mystery and awe and feelings that don't necessarily have to be essentially religious is the language of religion. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the subject of the story, of a story with religious imagery and story material in it is often about that sense of mystery that everybody feels toward life and the situation that we all realize we're in. Nobody gets out of this alive. So that's one thing. The other thing is that for me, religion is an expression of culture. And it's very true that my first taste of it combined Polish-American culture with Catholicism. But one of the things actually that the book that's coming, the novel and stories, is about is in fact a neighborhood that's changing from Slavic to Mexican. And I just found it fascinating as a young guy to watch the different how a different culture, the Mexican culture, adopted and adapted to all those Polish churches that were just sitting there. Mm-hmm. You know, how the different, how the version, the black version of Shostakovich was replaced by Our Lady of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, an even more powerful virgin. So, I mean, for me, that really implemented that sense of religion being a conductor of culture, that mm-hmm. by talking about religion, you could actually be talking about culture. And I think, you know, finally that sense of mystery and awe and that sense of culture is what fascinates me the most about it, far more than the idea of belief.
Right. Yeah, I don't think religion is, Catholicism is certainly not dissected in your stories, but it's made a part of everyday life in the sense that this is just what people do. Mm-hmm. This is just the way they live their lives.
Yeah.
And especially in Polish neighborhoods or in Mexican neighborhoods in Chicago. This is sort of off the point, but have you been back recently to Pilsen?
Oh, sure. I go back all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
What do you think of it changing now, as is the rest of Chicago in the last 10 years especially?
Well, Pilsen is a neighborhood that has been impervious to certain kinds of changes that Chicago has gone through. That is, it still has a huge ethnic character, whereas a lot of the neighborhoods, I think, have in fact lost their ethnic character, despite the names realtors might give them. The gentrification of Pilsen has become a real struggle, whereas in other neighborhoods, gentrification was just kind of accepted, maybe even applauded. Mm-hmm. In Pilsen, it's become very problematic because there is a genuine community there. Mm-hmm. And to gentrify it means that first-generation Americans are losing their homes or they can't afford, you know, the rents go up. And so all of which is fascinating to me, none of which I feel particularly qualified to write about.
Yeah. Now, that's a lot of other people have. The same things have happened in Wicker Park and Bucktown and Uptown and so forth. And it's a very famous issue in Chicago. But you're right, I think it seems particularly strong in Pilsen because that is such an extreme ethnic place. And it's not the north side.
No. Nope.
These things were all happening at the north side, and Pilsen is the first place in the south side for this to really happen.
Or I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Just music. I know that music is important to your writing, and I've read that it's one of the ways in which something like things get written, listening to music.
I do. I listen to music when I write. And hasten to add that I know lots of writers who can't imagine doing that. Joyce Carol Oates told me, in fact, that she said, I couldn't possibly write the music. Mm-hmm. I'd want to listen to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just depends on how you're wired. It's also become, it's really one of the strongest thematic elements in this book that comes out in November. Mm-hmm. It's a novel in stories, and every story in the book has a song at its heart, sometimes more than one song, but always at least one essential song. Mm-hmm. And the title of the book, which is a strange one, I Sailed with Magellan, mm-hmm. is actually, when you read the book, you find out it's the title of a song that one of the characters has made up. So, you know, not only is it important to me in terms of process, but in this particular book especially, the process becomes part of the actual theme, product, narrative line. Mm-hmm.
I've read jazz, specific kinds of jazz, or
I love
older
all kinds
jazz,
of,
newer jazz?
No, I love all kinds of, well, I don't even think in terms of writing, I think I don't have those categories. It isn't that I'm dismissing the categories. You know, if a bunch of people are just sitting around and talking about music, they're very handy. Mm-hmm. But I think two basic categories. One is music that I'm going to listen to, as people do when they gather around to have drinks or mm-hmm. share food or whatever, and music that I listen to when I write, mm-hmm. which, you know, I think of as writing music. Mm-hmm. And the character of writing music can be, is significantly different, more meditative, more repetitive, darker, mm-hmm. Than the kind of music I think that would be a very attractive. In fact, I think some of the music I listen to when I write would quickly snuff out any social gatherings. So.
More avant-garde kinds of things?
Some of it is, but yeah. You know, it's more a kind of a mood that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I, to some degree, that's in line with what I'm looking for in fiction. I mean, for me, mood is not a preeminent quality that of modernism, and especially not of postmodernism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think tone is probably the preeminent quality of what I mm-hmm. would consider postmodern work. Mm-hmm. I don't think mood has really been the preeminent quality since maybe 19th century, when you had Poe and Hawthorne and Melville, and those are writers of mood. And so, in a way, it pleases me to work that area. Not that I have any huge grudges against tone or postmodernism or anything along those lines, but and music is kind of a guide for me.
Mm-hmm. When I taught, I used an assignment, and I think a lot of people have this assignment for writers, is to go to a museum and pick out a piece of art that you like particularly, and write something as if that work had words, was made of words, rather mm-hmm. than whatever it's made of. You can do the same thing with music, I think.
Right, yes, you can.
Yeah. One last question. Baseball. I ask this because there's baseball that is a reoccurring thing in your work, and I'm a big fan. So I don't know if you're, are you still a fan of baseball?
Well, I am, but oddly, I find myself now going to college games mm-hmm. and kid games. Mm-hmm. There's one of the most beautiful little ballparks I've ever seen in Key West, where I usually go for 4 or 5 weeks a year. And they have a little league and pony league, and I'll just sit there watching these kids play ball. I think it isn't that I still don't enjoy going to major league games. I mean, you certainly see great athletes there, but the desire to somewhat escape from all the stuff that you've unfortunately learned about owners and the greed that surrounds the game. The game itself is still beautiful, of course.
Yeah. Do you go to major league games at all?
Oh, sure.
Do you go to games
sure.
when you go to Chicago?
Oh, absolutely.
The White Sox?
Yeah. Sox, Cubs.
Cubs, both?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. Did you see what happened the other day at the Comiskey?
You mean the fans rushing out onto the field?
Yeah, which has happened twice in the last 2 years. Yeah. It's just nuts.
Yeah.
I think that was great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.